Were you wanting to produce this yourself, or were you consciously trying to forego an outside producer?
No. I think our other records we had made with a great producer, Tom Monahan, and you know, I think we're all in a good group mindset, you know. So I think for this record, because things have been going forward and progressing well, we had a little extra time and a little extra budget to not have to, you know, we definitely had more time to kind of breathe and see where our collective creative conscious, what it could conjure up in an occult sort of, you know, focus. You get a bunch of people up on the side of a mountain in a rainy January, and everyone focuses, and then boom, you have this music. So there is like a magic element.
As far as the physical setting, you put yourself in a different place as well. You went to a more rural area. How did that change, or how did that change of scenery maybe change or alter the music itself that came on this new album?
I mean, intrinsically, it will all be changed because, you know, if you're even anywhere in your conscious waking mind trying to be in the moment or recognize what that is, and on a cellular level, I mean, it would have been 3 years since we had been in the studio. Again, just to preface, we're very lucky to even be in studios in this day and age doing what we do. We had made our other records in Los Angeles, an awesome studio there, Sunset Sound, super famous studio and amazing people, best gear. And then this time we had the opportunity, to be in Northern California, to have a castle with a view, if you will. And like I said, I think, again, we want to utilize that time. It's a unique opportunity to still be able to work in beautiful studios. And, you know, people will think making recordings are this antiquated, archaic thing, and records, and to call something an album is, you know. So for us, the excitement and the pleasure and the satisfaction of being able to still experiment sonically and do those things, it just, man, are you kidding? We're the luckiest people in the world to still get to do it.
Let me ask you about a business decision. You decided not to go with iTunes or Spotify with this new release, and I don't know if the follow-up here as well, except for maybe one song, which is California Hymn.
We kind of go back and forth sometimes. I mean, I do feel that the streaming services, you know, if they would, you know, I'm sure their top-level people make quite a bit more money than most of the artists that people are listening to.
Yeah, you think?
pay everyone fairly, and everyone would be completely happy. I mean, there's people are listening to, you know, I'm not going to get bent out of shape about it. I mean, it is what it is. You look at that, again, it comes from the same culture that music, you know, you can pull your camera out and film something at a Broadway show, they'll throw you out. Pull your camera out in a movie theater, they'll throw you out. But you can film music you can steal, music you can hijack. You know what I mean? It's just, I just think it's funny, the culture of music, how sort of cheap it is for everyone. And I guess, you know, the surface of that is capitalism. So be it. The underside of that is everything else that's really much less surface, you know, and there's all this music that exists and lives and breathes and all these beautiful people making it. And
yeah, and any way you love, we know how you feel. When I had to get songs ready for the interview and da-da-da, you know what? It's not on Spotify. It's not on iTunes. I had to go out and pay $14 for the record, which a lot of people don't because they listen on various streaming media. So,
well, you know, part of the philosophy, again, and like if we're where this all kind of comes together, you know, I live in Marin County, California, outside of San Francisco, and there's this craft beer, you know, movement is really interesting to me. I don't even drink beer anymore, but the point of it is like there's a beer in California called Pliny the Elder, you know, and people just line up at the Whole Foods, you know, when it comes out every few weeks or whatever. You can only get like one person can only have two bottles. It's more expensive than the other beer. And you see people walk out of there like they're so happy to have it. And in my mind, it was like, oh, I get that. That's a connoisseur sort of thing. Like, yeah, I can go get whatever I want whenever I want, but this is different, and there is something. I understand that kind of weird thing, you know.
Okay.
I think we had to do that with our band. You know, we're old guys who write like songs, who are into melody and guitars and poetry and weird stuff. So it's like that's hardly the hippest, coolest thing. I'm in used record stores all over the country. There's weirdos like us. There's tons of people still going to see bands. You know what I mean? That's the thing, you know.
And we've got three in town. In this little town of 120,000, we've got three used record stores, and everyone is doing very well.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So that's what all of this is. This is the, you know, the end of the Roman Empire, and, you know, the Visigoths have, like, sacked the building.
Sure don't want to be last when that Holy Spirit gets past. Now this circle like electricity.
All right, we're talking with Chris Robinson, formerly of the Black Crowes. His new incarnation is the Chris Robinson Brotherhood. The song you're hearing is California Hymn. It's from their brand new release, Any Way You Love, We Know How You Feel. Well, I want to go back to crafting songs. In the early 1990s, when the Black Crowes were debuting on the scene, they were getting a lot of top 40 radio airplay alongside, you know, Madonna and Janet Jackson and Michael Bolton. It was a different time back then. I'm guessing, though, that if you weren't at least trying to craft some songs for radio airplay, your record company was probably pushing you to do that?
Well, you know, rock radio was much bigger then. We had big rock radio, a lot of number one rock radio records. But besides maybe a little bit of Hard to Handle and a tiny tail end of She Talks Angels, we didn't really get in the top 40 too much. I mean, in album sales, yeah. And to be fair, well, compared to other people that I know and their experiences coming up and their first records, and, you know, I was 22 years old, even though our record deal was, you know, nightmarish, everyone's was. I mean, and that's the way it is. But, I mean, there were things that I thought at the time were weird, but, I mean, pretty much we were left alone to, you know, sit in a rehearsal space and sit and write songs.
Do you have radio in mind at all anymore? Does that factor into anything you're doing?
Well, see, I think lucky for me, I didn't have that in mind ever. I mean, of course, that would be a prickly situation whenever that was the existence of everybody else's trip they were on. You know, what the eye on the prize. I was just naive and, I guess, just weird enough to just always think, you know, you make good records. Sometimes you will have a hit one. Sometimes you won't.
Huh,
you know,
okay.
I mean, it didn't stop Neil Young. It didn't stop, you know, Bob Dylan. It didn't stop, you know, anyone. Grateful Dead didn't have a real hit record until they had been about 30 years.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? So, you know, to me, I just thought, I guess I'm from that, you know, a certain time as well where that seemed a normal point of view, you know. And then I'm just not clever enough to make something that's commercially, you know, viable. You know what I mean?
Like,
sure. I think we lucked into that as kids because it was energy and rock and roll, and those are good songs. It you know, and it was a thing because, and it was also really different when all that silly, sort of superficial, like metal music was going on. That something that was roots inspired and more soulful, maybe. You know,
if you lived here, you would be home by now. Is an album that's coming out in just a couple of months as we're speaking. So that'd be, boy, two albums within 6 months of each other. Why so close together?
Yeah, I mean, we kind of consider this an EP. This is like the companion piece of the record. We ended up recording like 15 songs when we were at the studio.
So this is all one session then? The two albums are basically one recording?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, these are just songs that we made a decision to have this be the first release, and we didn't want to do a double album at the time. We wanted to focus on some new things and some new sounds, and this is indicative of the same thing. We love this record just as much, you know, and we've been actually playing these songs as the year's gone on.
Well, Chris Robinson, nice to talk with you. Thank you for giving us time, and we're looking forward to seeing you at the Castle Theater here in Bloomington.
Right on. Thank you so much.